Off the Ball Breakfast.
I have not seen a minute of this tournament.
That's what the cool kids say these days.
Genuinely haven't.
Everyone's saying that. I haven't seen a second of it.
It's not a thing. It hasn't even...
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
League of Ireland football
on Off the Ball,
brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00. Get the facts, be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Right then, it is a huge night tomorrow evening. It is Shelburne up against Linfield in the first leg of their Champions League qualification tie. It is 20 years since a pretty famous meeting between the two clubs in the 2005 Setanta Cup final. We've got a pair of representatives from both clubs with us on the show. We've got former Shelburne midfielder Stewie Byrne right here in studio. Stewie, how are you doing?
I'm good, Owen. I'm good. Good to see you.
And former Linfield player Darren Murphy is with us on the line. Darren, thanks a million for taking the call. How are you getting on?
Good, Owen. Thank you.
Delighted to be able to talk about 2005, I'd suggest, Darren.
Now, hopefully I can remember. It's that long ago. Here it was a great day, great experience. Obviously, in occasions like that, it's always nice to end up on the winning team. But it was certainly a special occasion for obviously both sets of players and both sets of supporters and the teams involved. It was a really, really good game. It was a great evening.
So this was the first ever Setanta Cup. You might just give us a bit of background on this, Stewie, the sense of buzz about being able to find the best team on the island around that point, because it was quite novel.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you rightly said, it was the first Setanta Cup final, and to have it in Tolka Park, Linfield versus Shelburne, yeah, I mean, you probably couldn't have gotten a bigger game on the island at the time. And we were midst, Celtic Tiger stuff, so you can kind of put two and two together. There was plenty of money going around. There was a lot of PR around the game. I remember, and Darren obviously remembers it for positive reasons. I remember for the negative. But what I do remember about it was the level of interest and the sheer sort of, I don't know, the showcase of it all. It was different level stuff. It really was. Like, there was, you know, it was something happening every day in the build up to the game in terms of press and media and PR. And on the day, the atmosphere was fantastic, and you know, we obviously brought a big crowd, but I have to say the Linfield crowd were top notch. Like, you know, they're a proper football club. Like, you know, yeah. you don't always get that, or you certainly didn't always get that in the League of Ireland at the time. You would get it at times, but when Linfield came to town, it was you know, hairs in the back of your neck kind of a stuff, and you kind of got a glimpse really into what the potential for football could be on the island. And that's pretty much was my big takeaway. And I know other people have spoken about it as well, but we wanted to play Linfield every year, or, you know, two or three times a year, like go to Windsor or then come down here. And I think it was it's a pity that the actual cup itself didn't hang around. However, I do think the idea is definitely still, hopefully, a viable one.
Yeah, we might actually come to that in a little while to talk about where a future might actually lie for this sort of competition. But Darren, when you talk here about all these sort of motivating factors, it did feel that at that point the League of Ireland was going through a bit of a boom. So I'm sure there was that point of view in the North and from an Irish League perspective that, geez, yeah, we're going down there as underdogs and we'd love to put them in their place.
We certainly knew we were going into the game as an underdog. You know, obviously Shelburne were the top side. There was no question about that. You just had to look at their domestic campaign, their European campaigns, everything that went with it. You know, we knew how big a club Shelburne were. We knew the quality of player that they had in their squad. So we were coming off the back of a very difficult domestic campaign ourselves. We had just lost the league in the final day, or penultimate day of the season, to Glentoran at the Oval. And it was always then going to be to try and, you know, make sure the season was successful. And obviously we had the biggest hurdle of all, which was going to Shelburne in their own backyard to try and win the competition for the first time. We were under no illusions how difficult it was going to be, but we always had a wee bit of belief in ourselves, and we had a really, really good panel of players. And at that time, probably, you know, the League of Ireland and the Irish League were very much nearly on a par. You know, it was then that the League of Ireland just took off and run away from the Irish League. And I think that's why the All-Ireland competition maybe in the end became more like a Southern competition, if truth be told, because the teams in the North just could not compete. But I certainly agree with Stewie. I think we're now back to the stage where, you know, the teams in the north have got themselves in a position. When you look at, you know, Glentoran, Linfield, Lorne, Coleraine, the investment of money that's went back into the league in the north, that we're maybe getting back to the stage where we can maybe look at that competition again, maybe not in the same format, maybe in a smaller format. But, you know, I certainly agree with Stuart. Our big game was Glentoran, and the atmosphere of the Belfast Big Two was something special. I'm sure it was the same in the Dublin Derbies. You know, the atmosphere there was special. But that game brought something different, you know. And I always find it very interesting. You know, David Jeffrey was manager of Linfield for 17 years, and he's always asked about, you know, the one standout moment in his career. And it wasn't winning six doubles in 7 years. It was winning the St. Anta.
Really?
Yeah, that he puts it down as the pinnacle of his managerial career at Linfield, and it's something that always stands out for me when you listen to the man talking, especially when he spent 17 years. So it showed the magnitude of the achievement that he found it to be. And as players, I suppose we didn't really appreciate at the time how good of achievement it was until you look back on it now, 20 years, and you see the old footage and you see the crowd. You know, the crowd was... Stuart says the crowd was magnificent. Both sets of fans made it. You know, they certainly did.
So the format for that year's St. Anta Cup was two groups of three teams, and then the top of each group would play each other in the final. So you both topped your groups, obviously, but your group was far from straightforward, Darren. I think it's fair to say you topped it. But your first day out against Longford Town, you were beaten 2-1. But then there's this brilliant 3-2 win against Glentoran in Windsor Park. And then at the Oval, you beat them 4-2. So you get actually back-to-back wins against Glentoran on the way to this final. So I'm not surprised to hear that Jeffrey says that it is the best sort of achievement of his career, because back-to-back wins against Glentoran and then going down to the south to beat Shells, you couldn't really write a better script.
No, you couldn't. And I always remember Longford, going to the Longford game and was like, wow, stadium was, you know, it was so different to anything you'd seen in the north. And it was interesting because when I became manager of Finn Harps and I went back to Longford, it hadn't changed too much. after the first defeat, you know, we knew it was going to be difficult because obviously we had to play our biggest rivals home and away to win both them games, and then obviously set up the Mouthwater and tie with, in my eyes then, that without question, the best team in Ireland. They had the best players. In all positions, they were such a threat everywhere. You know, when you look at Joseph Endo, you look at Ali Cahill, you're nearly afraid to miss somebody out. You know, Beggar, all the players that had, Stu himself in the middle of the park, Owen Harry, there was so much quality in the squad. Dave Rogers, a good friend of mine who I worked with at Finn Harps, obviously there at the time as well. So there was so much quality in it, but we went there with a real belief, and that's down to David and his managerial team, and obviously with Pat Fenlon standing in the opposite dugout as well, who is an iconic figure at Windsor. You know, he has the nickname Billy Fenlon. You know, they don't call him Pat, he's wee Billy Fenlon, that's his nickname at Windsor. And you know, having all that link and everything in it, you know, just made the game that wee bit more special.
Your path to the final is pretty interesting as well, Shiri. First day out, a 3-3 draw against Portadown, and then go down to Turner's Cross, get beaten by Cork 1-0, but you still top that group eventually come the end. Yeah, so you also were put through the ringer to get yourself to the final.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was, you know, there was no easy games in those days. Like, you know, I do think there was a... I do think that was a kind of a golden patch. There was maybe a kind of a 4 or 5 year span there where there was, you know, really real good quality in both leagues, and certainly the first St. Anta Cup I think probably brought that forward. But like, it's funny that himself mentions it like as being, you know, it's such an event for Linfield to remember this. Like, it's actually my biggest regret in my career, and I mean 20 years on I still talk about it, and it's still something that even actually talking about it now it's getting me quite emotional. But it also it does kind of bring forward how, I mean, you don't have regrets in football. You try your best not to have regrets in life, but if you ever got an opportunity to go back and try and make something good in your mind, that would be one thing I would try to do. Like, you know, because of you rightly mentioned that Pat had come from Linfield. Pat is revered at Linfield, you know, and we knew that, you know, as players knew that from when Pat came back down to play in the league here, because it was quite an unusual thing, you know, for a Southerner to go up to Linfield and to be just loved by them. They just loved them, like, you know, and from knowing Pat so personally, you can see why it happened. But there were such. I don't know how to express it. There are so many reasons for them to hate him.
But yeah,
the football and maybe the personality of the man was what came true. And I think there's a huge lesson to even learn from that alone. But that aside, Pat was like, he wanted to win that game. He was really up for that. Like he knew what kind of a crowd Linfield were going to bring to this. He could, you know, it's like he'd been through it. He knew what was coming. And he tried to kind of mentally prepare us for the game, like, you know.
Darren, was it a case where it was a begrudging respect for Fenlon at the start, which actually turned into a sense of pure love towards him?
I think Stu's right. I think it was the stature of the man and the quality of the footballer that he was. Linfield fans adored quality footballers. They certainly did. Pat came at an era along with another one, the Dundalk Hawk and Desi Gorman, who between the two of them, you know, probably changed the landscape of Southern players coming to the North. You know, how well they were accepted at Windsor, you know, I think opened the door for a lot of other Southern players to come and have really, really good careers in the North. And even to this day, you know, when Pat came back, as a general manager of Linfield Football Club, again, played a huge role in transforming the football club to where it is today. You know, having the foresight, having the ambition to force the powers that be to go down that full-time route. And I think that's why so many Linfield fans and so many, you know, ex-Linfield players and a lot of people connected to the Linfield Football Club hold Pat in such high esteem, because the work that he's done both there as a player and as a general manager is there for everyone to see. And that's why I feel that he's held in such high esteem. Again, and a lot of it goes down to the man himself. You know, Stu knows him like me, and he's a great, great man, a great football man. But he's a people person, and that's hugely important for me in the game.
Is some of that ringing true to you, Stu, when you think back to your experience going up to play with Crusaders?
Yeah, I mean, I had actually played against Linfield for Crusaders. I was only up there for a short period before I came back. But I mean, I there's something about I think there's something about the environment up there that sort of it kind of brings out the best in you, if you know what I mean. It's very difficult to explain, like, you know, but you kind of do feel that. You won't get away with much up there, if you know what I mean. I think there's a kind of honesty about the supporters up there, and they like genuine people. And my experience playing against Linfield, that was a hell of an experience. I can't even remember the result of the game. I just remember the game had to be stopped, believe it or not, because there was full glass bottles of Guinness being thrown onto the pitch when we had a corner, like, you know. And to a lot of people, you know, people might listen to this now, right, and say, oh, geez, that sounds awful. I'm not lying to you. It was great. It was brilliant, like, you know, because that's gone out of the game now, that kind of real raw energy. You really know, like, you're in that sort of, you know, you're in the kind of coliseum, and it's kind of it's a battle between you and the other person sort of a thing. And I think there's elements about that anyway that I love to be part of. Like, I felt, you know, as a, you know, from my own personal point of view, I had to, you know, to play well, I had to kind of pick somebody, and I had to say it's between me and you. Otherwise, I don't think I'd play well. You know, that was just the kind of player I was. But, you know, being up there, it would certainly open your eyes. Yeah, but like, it wasn't just that. It wasn't just the raw energy of the place. There was real quality in it, and I think that's, you know, you look back at maybe look, everything's greater when you look back at it nostalgically, like, you know, but when you look back at sort of the pace of the game back then, it was 90 miles an hour, but there was always quality in that sort of, like, you know, when you see players injecting that moments of quality into what is such a frenetic atmosphere, you really appreciate that moment of quality an awful lot more than maybe in the it's maybe the game is a little bit more passive now. Look, it's certainly technically better, and there's a lot more quality at different times. But I think you appreciate quality when it's in chaos. I don't know whether that makes sense at all. Like, you know, and that was certainly the way the game was back then. Anyway, at least
there were just these little pockets of
just moments of magic.
Yeah,
they stood out more because they were kind of. It was blood and thunder stuff. It felt as killing each other and then be 90 miles an hour and then moment of magic. And it was just a bit like watching Ozzy Ardile is doing the flick in, you know, in Escape to Victory. It's everything goes into slow motion, you know, that kind of way, because you appreciate it. So, I mean, there's that's just the way I probably look back at things. Like, you know, I'm a bit of a softy for nostalgia. So.
Well, that's exactly what we're here for, so it's perfect. And also, in this scenario where it's very, very difficult to find any good footage of this game online,
true, yeah.
There is footage of the goals with an Adele soundtrack over it on Facebook, but no real... no, you'd almost feel emotional
ACDC or something,
on behalf of Linfield. We're going to need you to like talk us through this. So it's 2-0 win for Linfield. You might give me a different answer to this. Full value for your win, Darren?
You were. Yeah, dead you were.
I think we defended extremely well. You know, we had a very, very young goalkeeper in Alan Manus who went on to have an absolutely unbelievable career at Shamrock Rovers as well. You know, and we had probably at the time two of the top centre forwards in Northern Ireland football, and both scored special goals that night. It's interesting, Stu talks about special moments and special games. Them two came up with two special goals in a very special game. I think we had the complete performance. You know, it was my final 90 minutes for Linfield. That was the last 90 minutes I played. My contract was up at the end of that season. I was 32 at the time, and I moved on to a quieter life. So I did. but for me, you know, it was probably over my 5-year tenure at Linfield. It was probably the toughest 90 minutes I ever played in a game of football. You know, the sheer exhaustion at the end of the game was there for not just me. It was for all of our players, and I think it was the same on the Shelbourne team. It was a game that was played in a fantastic spirit against two sets of players that really, really wanted to win the game. And as Stu said, there were special players in the game. You know, Tino made some big saves in the game at the right moments. And then obviously we had the two top marksmen at the far end of the pitch who delivered the goods at the time. But, you know, for me, it's nice to hear Stu say that he thought we deserved it over the 90 minutes. I thought it was a very, very tight game between two sides that was defined, like he said, by just that wee bit of quality on the night, and on the night our two centre-forwards delivered that.
Yeah, the two centre-forwards you're talking about are Peter Thompson and Glenn Ferguson. I'm conscious, Darren, that some of our listeners may have never seen them play. Obviously, they played a couple of times for Northern Ireland at senior level. So talk to us about this pair of marksmen. What made them so special?
I think everything. Glenn Ferguson, for me, was the best player that I played with, and what Glenn done very well was that he had understudies in Davey Larmer, Chris Morgan and Peter Thompson, who all in their own right were fantastic footballers. Glenn, for me, could have played anywhere. You know, he could have played centre half, centre midfield, centre forward. He was everything you wanted in a centre forward. There was no question about that. Probably very similar to the centre forward at Shelbourne. You know, Jason was again very similar to Glenn and all his attributes and what they brought to the game. I don't think we see too many of them. I'm sure Stu will agree with me. We don't see too many centre forwards today who like the hustle and the bustle of competing for centre halves and letting the centre halves know they're in games. I think that's what Ferguson brought, but what he also brought was goals. Spike is the second all-time leading goal scorer in Irish League history. So that speaks volumes of the man. He holds a record in the North where he scored 5 consecutive hat-tricks in a row, which has never been equaled again in the North. And he was just genuinely all-round. He, without question, I know the word legend can be used quite cheaply in modern-day football, but he's certainly a legend of not just Linfield Football Club, but Irish League football in general.
What do you remember in terms of preparing for those guys and what sort of information you had about the Linfield team that were coming down to Talca that night?
Oh, I mean, obviously Pat knew Linfield, you know, like the back of his hand. I mean, you know, and like I mentioned earlier, he knew he knew what was coming. Like, you know, this wave was gonna was gonna come. At the time, Owen Heary was injured for the final. Owen was our captain, like, you know. So I stood in for captain. I'd done all the PR and all the press stuff, and I definitely didn't underprepare. I think we very much had huge respect for Linfield, but just it's very difficult to explain. I don't know whether we were trying to play a different game, but they kind of played us at our game. You know, they were just aggressive and resolute, and you know, physical in the real man sense of physicality, not dirty. I mean, just like, and like, I mean, I do remember the one thing I remember from the game is Glenn Ferguson. I remember looking at this guy going, this guy's like Alan Shearer.
Really?
Yeah, he was unbelievable. He was incredible. And then Colin Hawkins and Davey Rogers were marking, they couldn't handle him. And, you know, all around the pitch, I think, you know, that I've never had any qualms about the result in the game. Linfield deserved to win the game. But I do remember looking at Ferguson and going, wow, this guy is just, just able to kind of, to go up against two of those centre-halves of the quality they had. Like, I'm not trying to sound out Colin and Dave, of course, not like, you know, just, I had more respect for him and how he handled himself and how he took his goal as well. The final whistle as well, I always remember this. The final. I'd normally be a little bit headstrong, and when things would go wrong, I'd be heading straight for the tunnel. Like, you know, I always remember just saying, we just sort of stood there and had to go over and applaud Linfield and just say, sometimes you have to put your hands up and say we were beaten by the better team. Like, you know, and that was it. Like, it was we were, and it was a huge lesson for us. In definitely, like, I mean, I think that is probably. I don't have very many regrets in my career. I mentioned it before. That's up there with top three. And I think it was the one game where we said to ourselves that we will never let that happen again. Like, you know, and I think that's more out of respect for Linfield and how they basically came to Tolka and put it up to us, you know.
In case you missed this morning's Off the Ball breakfast,
we had this.
The Cork are just about viable favourites. They've beaten Tip twice, so you could be afraid that the same thing would happen again. But I'm not really, because I just think that Tip have really nothing to lose. I mean, a defeat in the All-Ireland final is not going to hold us up, really, to be honest with you.
And we also had this.
Ali McCoys was absolutely hilarious. I remember Ali goes to me, we're going to be having a fair few pints of Guinness here, so they take a while to pour. So when I want another round for the lads, I'm just going to give you a nod, all right? And I was like, yeah, no problem. So he takes the 3 points, walks over, puts them down, turns around and nods at me. And I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be a long night.
You can catch everything from this morning's Off the Ball breakfast elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning from 7:30.
What happened with a couple of red cards late in the game? Was it after full time, potentially?
Oh, I'd say that was frustration. You're going to have to remind me about that one.
Alan Moore and Jason Byrne.
That would have been first. Yeah. I think, look, that's perfect evidence of how they just got inside our heads, like, you know. And I'd say frustration would have boiled over. Alan Moore is, and Jason, like, I mean, two Irish internationals, but Moore's was, you know, probably one of the most technically gifted players I've ever seen. But my lord, he can just snap, you know, and very rarely would snap unless it was something that was really. But I think that was just more to do with how Linfield just kind of taught us a lesson, and I think frustration just boiled over in the end.
It just underlines further the importance of this game to every man on that pitch. Like, you mentioned the pint bottles being thrown down onto the pitch. What else did the Linfield crowd bring that day to almost intimidate you in your?
Well, the pint bottles was in a different game playing for Crusaders, but what, like. I think there could be a restriction on the crowd tomorrow. I'm not too sure how many they're going to bring, but believe me, when I've played in plenty of games where they're, you know, away fans could be in their thousands, okay? But unless they can make their presence felt, it doesn't really matter. These guys, like, you know, these are like lifetime football supporters. They're proper football. I would describe them as proper football supporters. And you can read into that what you want, like, you know, but they make their presence felt. You know, that kind of way, they just get in on top of you. And that for me is something the Shelbourne players really have to be wary of. It's, I think when you play in European football, and obviously that was an internal cup competition, but this is Europe now. You can play this two different ways. You can fall into the sort of trap of it being Europe, and you're supposed to keep possession, and you're supposed to do all this stuff in Europe. Pep Guardiola, iPads, tactics, all this kind of stuff. You have to read a game during the game for what it is, and this could very quickly turn into something completely different. And I played in games in Europe, played Glentoran in Europe, something similar, where the referees, they just let it go. And I don't know if you might have noticed this even from last year's Champions League. I find the European referees are more willing to let games go, and they kind of almost allow the physicality come through more than you probably would see domestically. So this is a big test for Shelbourne, especially when you consider where they are psychologically at the moment. They're wounded. They're down at the moment. They're trying to claw their way back up. This could go, this is a huge game for them, not just physically, but mentally, for them to kind of show, I think, for them to show themselves, to kind of, that they have to get themselves back on the horse. And this is an extremely difficult game, and it's going to be an extremely difficult game for them.
Just one last thing on 05. Darren, do you still have your winner's medal?
I actually do, yeah. I still have it. No, the only thing I would say about 05, which again, and Stu's right, the restriction on the crowd, obviously tomorrow evening, maybe doesn't bring the same atmosphere. And I think that's maybe where the game needs to maybe improve. It's improved in all different other elements, but it needs to improve in allowing people in that want to watch the game. Because the big standout memory for me that day, when we were out on the pitch warming up, obviously the Shells supporters were in the ground, but the noise the Linfield fans made coming down the street to make their way into Tolka, you could hear it as you were warming up. And then what was quite interesting, the changing rooms have now been changed. We came out of the old changing room, and as you stepped down out onto the pitch and you looked to your right, you could just see the sea of blue. It had just filled right down the far side of the ground. And that for me is where, if they can get it back to them days, then I think that's where the game, you can go again to the next level. I think that's maybe the only downside. There would be so many, many other people want to go to the game tomorrow evening, but unfortunately, restrictions holds back on that. Yep, I do have the medal. I actually have it in a jersey at home. I've got three jerseys from 3 years, and it's 2003 was a league winner, 2004 was an Irish Cup winner, and the 2005 was a St Anta Cup winner, and the three jerseys are in with the three medals. So I suppose it's something that my kids will look back on and have me, it's there now anyway. No one, would I love to be back there? Yeah, but unfortunately I can't.
I mean, the good news, Hugh, is that you have a St Anta Cup runners-up medal, right?
No, I don't. No, thanks for that one, Owen. Yeah, I threw my medal into the river, the Falk River. I mean, like I said, I could get a little bit headstrong on certain things, but I was gutted at that. And I'm trying to portray here is how a game of that importance can affect you for your life. I still think about it. I'd love to change it. I might go looking for the medal tomorrow. You never know when I'm down there. I might have a little look in the Tolk River. It's probably all rusted over now, but
it could be still there.
It could be still there. Yeah.
Were you the only one who threw your river?
I don't know. I just remember that we were sick. We were. Yeah. It was. You can just imagine how we were.
What did you do that night?
I probably went home and had a glass of wine. To be honest, what I tend to normally do when I'm. I don't know, but we went to bed. We were properly sick, but really were. It took us a while to get over that. I mean, I think that affected us for 6 weeks to 2 months, really just knocked the stuff on Elvis. A little bit of doubt came into the squad, and we had to really kind of scrap our way back from it.
Because it feels like it's quite a dramatic image, throwing your medal into the river. Is it something, quite flippant that you just did it on the way past, or did you actually kind of look at it, consider what you were doing and then do it?
Yeah, well, if you know Tolka, you've got, it's about a 30 or 40 foot climb up the river stand, and then there's the wall. But I don't want to go into that too much, but I think I probably took things a bit personally because I was captain on the day, and I kind of maybe I took that a bit personally. Like, you know, I mean, I got a bit of growing up to do as well at the time, I suppose. Like, you know, and again, I learned a lesson, but like just the frustration of it and how it, you know, I probably felt more than anything that I had let the team
in what sense?
Down. Well, again, just because I was captain for the day, you feel like the captain is, you know, there's no bigger shoes to fill than Owen Heary. Like, you know, Owen was our talisman. He was like, Owen's the kind of player, once you saw him at the end of the tunnel, you knew you were okay, like, you know. And I think we had looked up to Owen so much, and he wasn't there, and I knew maybe the people were looking at me, and I kind of knew the test that we were about to have. And yeah, took it a bit personally, all right, but had to learn from it fairly quickly as well.
Yeah, that's not necessarily a bad reaction, though. I mean, it's Michael Jordan's trademark phrase. I took that personally, you know, so.
Like I say, the game was a huge regret for us, and I think it certainly, I think it was a kind of a, I mean, you know, you have to have those wounds in life to be able to kind of know what you're missing and to kind of make you better. And I'd like to think that it was a game that kind of made us better, certainly for the 2006 season anyway, which we won't go into now.
Owen Heary was out talking about the Setanta Cup and All-Ireland games, and he just wants to see them back.
Yeah.
How would you like to see it? What sort of guys should it return in?
Any way they can make it happen, to be quite honest with you. Right. I know the difficulties involved, but, you know...
Well, he actually wants to see the FAI Cup broadened out into an All-Ireland thing.
Very good. I mean, I was about to say maybe this is Santa Cup, but the FAI Cup could work. There's no doubt about it. I think there are shared difficulties, you know, and my worry about... I mean, I'm not an expert in the Irish League, but what I fear about League of Ireland is that this surge in crowds is fantastic, and how the clubs are conducting themselves at the moment in that they've kind of... they now own their own identity and their own brand, and, you know, they don't need the FAI or any sort of outside source to help them with that. What they need is the FAI and the state and all the stakeholders to be able to kind of, they need the funds and the money to develop infrastructure. And I think that's a shared issue across between the league here and the Irish League. And, you know, because of the GAA and because of the rugby, and you might argue that both sports are across the island, like, you know, I think the problem that football is going to have here is it's always going to be up against the GAA and the rugby. And I think that's a model we have to follow, because what I do worry about is that the game here will stall because of the lack of progression in that the infrastructure development. It needs funds. I mean you know, we've got a huge competition coming here in 2028. I think there should be money ring fenced in advance of that, but I don't see it really happening. And what I do see is the conversation going very, very quiet. And I know people will be saying in the background, oh, well, they're negotiating, the FAI are meeting. I think it's extremely quiet at the moment, and I'm worried about that. And what I am worried about is I'm old enough to have seen the ebbs and flows in the game here. I've seen it go from part-time to full-time to semi-pro, back to full-time, and I've seen how bad it can get, and I've seen how quickly it can get bad. And that's what I'm worried about. So I think there always has to be this kind of almost aggressive push forward, because that's the only way progression, in my opinion, will actually happen for the game here.
What can happen to... or how does an aggressive push actually look to you? Is it political action? Is it conversations between the FAI and those in power who can actually loosen the purse strings?
Yeah, I think so. I think there has to be a genuine acknowledgement from government that, yeah, the grounds need to be...
Did it feel lip service last year? I haven't heard that yet.
Yeah. No. It's all lip service. It's pre-election stuff. Yeah. It's not happening. I think the FAI and the stakeholders, the lobbyists, they have to get a hell of a lot more aggressive in their pursuit of some sort of acknowledgement from the government. I think it's very much they'll go away. You know, we'll have some sort of an economic downturn, and we'll have an excuse to just batten them off.
There's a role to be played there from the most prominent figures in the league, and that's one of the reasons why
Damien Duff not being Shell's manager maybe is a bit of a broader issue than just a Shelburne issue, where he had been pretty good at talking about the lack of facilities out there. Granted, it would be an idea that this league is built on sand if you're putting it down as a responsibility of one man, but a collective of people, not necessarily on his level, but of his same voice and his same opinion moving into one direction. That felt important last year as well when the league was having its best season in quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I think... I do think we have to be a little bit more, how do I say it? I mean, the whole fanaticism that's come into the world now, like, I felt sorry for Damien because I thought there was an awful lot of noise around them, like, you know, when it came to, you know, stuff being on his shoulders. I know Stephen Bradley's been very prominent in it as well, like, you know, and maybe Stephen doesn't have to necessarily deal with the kind of level of attention that maybe Damien would have brought, but we have to kind of get over that Damien Duff stuff. Like, you know, there's an element of fanaticism that's come into the world now. You look at Oasis tickets and Taylor Swift, and people are going around like, they're going around like headless chickens when it comes to all this kind of stuff. They need to calm down and really kind of start focusing on what the real problems are. Because, I mean, look what's happened with Damien. If all the attention was on Damien, he's now gone out of the game. You're back to square one again, kind of stuff. Like, you know, so really, it has to come from us. I do think the clubs themselves, Shelburne, I'll speak about Shelburne and Bowes, right? I mean, you know, I think the people now involved with both those clubs, they've got a head on their shoulders, you know. And I do think we have to back ourselves more at the clubs, because this was always our problem. It was never the case that we had really forward-thinking people that were able to do, you know, extraordinary things and suddenly change the mindset of how a club could be run, or more so, what a club could actually do for itself. I mean, look what both clubs have done for themselves now. It's incredible what they've done, like, you know. And I do think the key is in that mindset within the clubs and those people within the clubs. I think they have probably the best opportunity to kind of get the FAI first and foremost, and whomever is involved as a stakeholder, and to really put pressure on the government to kind of, you know, stop paying lip service to the game here and to actually recognise how important football is in this country, you know.
And I think the point you make there about ring fencing funds from Euro 2028 is a really, really good one.
I don't even know why that conversation hasn't been had. The economy is going to boom because of 2028. That's 3 years away. We should be banging on the door saying we need to see some of that money now.
Darren, I think that's a perfect point to bring you back in here as well, because unfortunately the Euro 2028 opportunity is not going to be there any longer for the North. And like, when you think about what Stewie is saying about the possibilities down here, that seems like a really missed opportunity for football in the North.
Yeah, again, it always seems that the conversation that never seems to come back to football people. It always seems to come back to politicians for me. I think the people in the League of Ireland spoke with their feet at the start of the new campaign when the game was played, obviously in the Aviva. And you see the amount of people that went to the game to kick off the domestic campaign. I think it was Bowes and Potts, was it? Or the first game of the season.
Bowes
and Rovers. Yeah, you had 40,000 plus people at the game. So there's an appetite in the League of Ireland. There's an appetite there for local football. And again, the government, as Stu says, it's easy, you know, to say this before the votes come out, and we're going to support this, we're going to support that. The proof's in the pudding. You know, the grounds do need brought up to scratch. Obviously, Tala is a magnificent stadium. There's no question about that. And Rovers have done a brilliant job using their own European money, their own success. You know, there has to be a lot more done by government in both North and South. You know, again, there's a lot of investment going into the Irish League. You know, there's personal investments have went into Lorne, personal investments into Coleraine. Cliftonville have now just got an American investor as well. So there's an investment going into the league. And again, we have sat, I don't know for how long, waiting on 36.2 million to be released to try and increase stadia and improve stadia in the North. And it still has not come through, and it still has not materialised. Again, I genuinely think we missed a fantastic opportunity, again, because of all the red tape and people having so many different opinions. Whereas for me, sport, all sports right across the whole island, you know, it generates money into the economy. And Croke Park would have been, or sorry, not Croke Park, Casement Park would have been an easy fix for me. But again, we have missed that opportunity, and we now have to sit back and watch the other parts of UK and Ireland enjoying the Euros. But I'm a great, you know, the reason I came into the League of Ireland for the 3 years that I did was because I wanted to try something different, because I'd always been in the North, and I was fortunate to travel around, obviously, in the First Division. And again, it's a league that's trying to push, you know, the Premier Division, but it needs help as well in its stadia. You know, the club that I was at have been trying for 18 years to get funding to build a new Finn Park. You know, it's the only senior team in the North, you know, up in the Northwest. It's the only team up there. And they have been unable still to secure that funding and get that new stadium built, which they're craving for to try and push their club on as well. And it's the same, again, Stu talks about bows and shells. That's all people that have done it again themselves without maybe some help from government and other people, but again, done by people that want to drive their football club forward. For the life of me, I can't understand why the people in government sit back when they do have people now in football clubs that are running them as a business. Maybe in years gone by, and I'm sure Stu will agree, we maybe had a few people that run football clubs. Maybe the government were maybe a wee bit afraid to release the funds, but I don't feel we're in that position now. And I feel, you know, for the game to improve, and for both national teams to improve, the Republic and the North, we need to have the infrastructure, and we need to have the investment put in, not just into the stadia, but into the academies right across the whole island of Ireland.
Just one last one for you, Darren. Give us a quick breakdown of what we can expect from Linfield over the course of this tie. So this is a club that went full-time in 2021. I'm sure the club has seen the benefits since then. Currently in pre-season, and the way the calendars don't align is a big talking point going into a fixture like this. You've got the David Healy aspect going into this as well. And then, as you mentioned, the amount of money on the line, granted it's been a good bit one already, but the amount of money on the line to progress just makes this competition with ginormous incentives. So talk to us about the expectation.
The expectation was there. I was part of David's coaching staff from 2018 to 2020, just before they went full time. So I was there for 2 years, and we were very unfortunate. You know, Karabakh scored in the 94th minute to prevent us from reaching the group stages of European football. So I know it's always been a burning desire for David to reach them group stages. He's very good as a head coach and manager in European campaigns. You know, David's a student of the game. He studies the opposition extremely well. I know he went to Galway to watch Shells play. I know he's also been to Talca, I think, when they played Derry as well, to watch them. So he'll be well aware of what Shelburne's threat will be. He'll be well aware of also the changes that obviously Joey has made. What I think Shelburne have done very well, yeah, they do have maybe that slight advantage where they're 25 games into their season and Linfield are just starting their domestic campaign. But what I think Shells have done very, very well is this weekend announcing the permanent role for Joey, because I think that takes away all the uncertainty of supporters, the uncertainty of committee members. It certainly takes away the uncertainty for players. Stu will know when you're playing under a caretaker manager, you always have your eye on who's coming in or what's going to happen down the line. Whereas now, obviously, the Shelbourne players realise that Joey's going to be the man that's in charge, and they're going to have to try and impress him, A, to get a new contract, or B, you know, that maybe forced their way into the team, because maybe, you know, obviously maybe Damien overlooked them and they maybe weren't in favour with Damien. But Joey coming in and getting a role on a permanent base, it's a fresh start for everyone. I think it was a very shrewd move by the Shelbourne board to make that decision just prior to the Linfield game. But it's a game that, you know, if both teams played at a potential, obviously you would still have to favour Shells purely and simply because of where they are in their domestic campaign and where Linfield are. You know, Shelbourne are coming to the business end of the season and Linfield are obviously just starting the journey.
Are you getting the sense of another famous 2004-esque run here, Siri, that we're at the outset of it?
Well, I think that has to be the goal, yeah. You have to think like that, you know. I mean, we were laughed at when you know, well, you certainly felt like we were laughed at that when we talked like that, you know. But you that's the way you have to think, you know. We're in a situation now, such as the stature of the game here. It's in, you know, a very good place, but you still have to convince people every day, every week. You know, League of Ireland, League of Ireland people are so passionate because they know. I think they know the potential. They know where this can go. And they do feel like they have to constantly tell everyone else and show everyone else what the potential is like, you know. And this is the way to do it. You know, this is the way to do it. You have to go into a competition like this, an opportunity like this, and realise its potential. Hopefully, from a Shelburne point of view, they might get... they might be able to look back maybe at 20 years ago and realise, well, look, if they can do it, why can't we? Things have to change. Yeah, you're going to have to put your best foot forward. It's there for you if you really want it. The question for Shells, and not to discount Linfield, I mean, for both teams, how much do you want it? That's what it comes down to.
Well, we're going to find out quite a lot from tomorrow evening. It's a 7:45 kickoff at Talca Park. Shuey Byrne, thanks a million for coming into studio to us.
Thanks, Colin.
Darren Murphy, great to chat to you. Thanks so much for taking the call.
Thanks, man.
See you, Darren. Thank you.
Cheers, lads. We'll take a quick break.
League of Ireland football
on Off the Ball,
brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00. Get the facts, be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.